order. But before we do, I'd like everyone to stand so we can do a Pledge of Allegiance. And can we have Gloria, can you lead us?
States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Can we have a roll call?
Yes, Commissioner Stevens?
Here.
Commissioner Gardina?
Here.
Vice Chair Hall?
Here.
And Acting Chair Rainey? Thank you. Oh, and Chair Blumenberg will be absent today.
Okay, we have a quorum. Now called to consider and approve the adoption of the agenda.
Move approval of the agenda as presented.
I'll second that.
It's been moved and seconded the adoption of the agenda. And all those in favor, let's do a roll call.
So since Vice Chair Hall is remote today, we'll have to do all of our motions via roll call. So Commissioner Stevens?
Here.
Commissioner Gar-
Yes.
Commissioner Gardina?
Yes.
Vice Chair Hall?
Yes.
Secretary Rainey?
Yes.
A vote carries 4-0.
Thank you. Now we'll go to the approval of the minutes of October the 16th, 2024. The minutes of November 20th, 2024, the minutes of December 18th, 2024, and the minutes of January 15th, 2025. Are there any additions or corrections? If not, can I get a motion for approval?
I'll move to approve as presented.
I'll second.
It's been moved and seconded to approval of the minutes and get a roll call.
Commissioner Stevens?
Yes.
Commissioner Gardina?
Yes.
Vice Chair Hall?
Yes.
Secretary Rainey?
Yes.
Vote carries 4-0.
Thank you. We'll now go to public communications. This is set aside to allow public testimony on items not on today's agenda. Each person must address the commission for up to 3 minutes, or at the discretion of the chair. Do I have any public briefings or questions or issues in the audience? Do we have any online?
There are no public speakers.
Seeing none, then we'll close the public communications and now go to the closed session report to council.
Secretary Rainey, members of the board, the board met in closed session to discuss the two items on the agenda, and no reportable action was taken.
Thank you. We'll now go to board communications. Board commissioners may present any brief topics on board issues, such as seminars, meetings, literature that would be of interest to the public or the commission. I'd like to go around. Does any commissioner have anything to they'd like to share, report? Seeing none.
This is Commissioner Howell. I'm currently at the National Working Waterfront Network Conference in San Diego. Don't have much to talk about right now, but I'm happy to report on it at the next regular meeting.
Thank you, Commissioner Howe. With that, we'll move to the staff and the general manager reports.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. A couple items related to the village first. Ventura Pottery Gallery is hosting a Valentine's Day ceramic exhibit on Saturday, February 8th from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. This one-day event features a showcase of handcrafted ceramic pieces for gift-giving this Valentine's season. Also on this Saturday, enjoy the band Intent as they take center stage, bringing reggae vibes and powerful rhythms to the scenic harbor, featuring incredible musicians from legendary bands like Steel Pulse and Big Mountain. This performance promises to be a celebration of Culture, Unity, and the Universal Language of Music for Black History Month. On Sunday, February 9th, Barefoot Boutique is hosting a Galentine's Day party from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. with refreshments, flash sale, plus gifts, gift card giveaways. And all are welcome to celebrate Valentine's Day and President's Day weekend, February 14th through the 17th at the Village. Highlights include live music on Saturday and Sunday from noon to 3 with several sales and special offerings from our Village businesses, and visit the Village visitor booth on the promenade on the 15th to send a Ventura Harbor postcard. The new Blooming Broncos Bouquet Bar, that's a lot, will also be in Channel Islands Courtyard on Saturday, February 15th from 1 to 4 p.m., offering floral arrangements for sale as part of Valentine's Day weekend by the sea. I would like to invite John Higgins up. He had passed some information out, and I know he would like to make some commendations related to some of the Harbor Patrol staff. John?
Good evening, Commissioners. We had hoped to have both officers, Bob Crane and Eric Bear, here in person. This particular thing was delayed because Officer Bear's mother was in hospice and she recently passed away, so he was unable to make it tonight, and there was another family commitment for the other. So we didn't want to further delay this, and I assure you that I have communicated with them and I will continue to communicate with them, both of everyone's sympathies for the loss, and also that we are continually proud of what they're doing. Tonight, I had the opportunity to kind of do a little pivot. So we're going to talk about this particular rescue that was on the agenda. And then if it's permissible, we would just add one additional rescue, both in the same theme of acknowledging patrol members that did work. So I'd like to introduce Senior Harbor Patrol Officer Brendan Donahue, who will walk you through the first rescue, and then I will follow up with the second one.
Thank you, John. Yeah, so I've met all of you, Commissioners. Good to see you again. For anybody that doesn't know, I'm Brendan. I'm the senior officer here at Ventura Harbor, and I would like to just review real quickly a rescue that happened back in November that was truly heroic in nature. At approximately 10 p.m. on November 11, 2024, a distress call was broadcast over VHF radio reporting a disabled vessel being pushed into the rocks near the Ventura Harbor entrance. Harbor Patrol officers Bobby Crane, with 35 years of experience, and Eric Bear, with 23 years of experience, responded immediately, deploying Boat 19 with a Code 3 response. Within 4 minutes, they arrived on scene to find a 25-foot vessel with five passengers on board dangerously positioned sideways against the rocks, tipping precariously as waves crashed against it. Recognizing the urgency of the situation, officers Crane and Bear skillfully maneuvered Boat 19 onto the back of an incoming wave to position themselves for the rescue. I told John I would stick to the script, but I do have to deviate here just for a second to emphasize the risk that was undertaken by that action. So they knew that that boat was up on the rocks because a swell had placed it there, and then the water receded and left it stranded. And they realized the only way to get to it was to do the same thing. And they were able to do so in a way that they could get up, pass a line to the other boat, and then get off the breakwall without damaging our boat or disabling it in a way that would have put them in the same situation. So that's what they did. They successfully threw a line to the vessel, which was caught by one of the passengers. And under the officer's direction, the line was secured to the disabled boat, allowing them to pull it safely off the rocks and into open water. Once they were safely away from the hazard, the vessel was towed back to the launch ramp. Harbor Patrol Officer Tim Burrows, also with 23 years of experience, was donning his equipment to deploy one of our rescue watercraft, which is a specific piece of equipment that would have been instrumental in recovering any passengers who had entered the water. Fortunately, the quick actions taken by the officers on Boat 19 prevented the need for an in-water rescue. Burroughs changed back into his uniform and took a truck to the launch ramp to assist the other officers. Upon arrival at the launch ramp, officers Crane and Bear assessed the occupants and discovered that among the five individuals on board were an 84-year-old woman, two young children, and their parents, whose swimming abilities were unknown. They also confirmed no medical aid was required, a safety talk was provided, and all were released without further action. Without the swift and decisive actions of Officers Crane and Bear, this incident would have ended in tragedy. Had the boat capsized at that location, all five passengers would have been thrown into the 50-degree water with strong swells pushing them against the rocks. Even a strong swimmer would have faced extreme difficulty in these conditions, and those with limited experience would have had little chance for survival. The professionalism, skill, and training of our Harbor Patrol staff once again made the difference between life and death. Their ability to rapidly assess and execute a rescue under dangerous conditions is a testament to their dedication and to the strong support we received from the board and the general manager in equipping and preparing our personnel. Thank you all.
Now you understand why we did it in this order. So the second one, Senior Harbor Patrol Officer Brendan Donahue, was part of. So rather than have him tell the story himself and have everyone say he was bragging, I will do that on his behalf. You guys all recall on December 13th, coincidentally around the same time, 10 in the morning, commercial fishing vessel capsized in relatively calm conditions outside the harbor entrance. The call, similar to the last, came in by way of the radio, and fortunately, Senior Harbor Patrol Officer Donahue, 3-year veteran of the Port District, was dockside. Couldn't see it, but heard it on the radio, instantly hopped on the boat and was able to get on scene within 3 minutes. What he found was a 65-foot aluminum squid vessel, capsized, nearby a small aluminum tender afloat with 6 people in it, 4 survivors from the capsized vessel and 2 bystanders who had assisted in the rescue. Fortunately, there was another boat that was right next to the boat and watched the whole thing happen. Because they have those skiffs on the back of the boat, they were able to quickly launch it. And even though we got there within 3 minutes, they had already got theirs out. So I made sure to reach out to that crew and thank them for their support of the local fisheries. And I plan to give them some type of certificate on behalf of the Port District also. Officer Donahue approached the skiff. He quickly scanned the area for additional persons in the water, ensured that all individuals were accounted for, and relayed critical information to the fire department and requested an ambulance. Things that we have to do on the fly while we're in the middle of something, but he did it very successfully. Harbor Patrol Officers Winter, with 3 years of experience, and Marine Safety Officer Warren, with a whopping, I think, less than 6 months experience. But a talented individual and a present licensed California paramedic arrived shortly after Officer Donahue and immediately hopped in and delivered assessments and medical aid to the victims, brought them aboard the Harbor Patrol boat and transported them back to the dock. What we always do, we always bring the victims back to land and then address the ongoing thing. As that was happening, Senior Harbor Patrol Officer Donahue coordinated with myself and Towboat US to aggressively secure the vessel to the best of our ability and try to remove it from the immediate hazard of being an obstruction in our harbor entrance. He was able to do that successfully, and they were able to tow the vessel out into deeper water. Sometime after that, both the general manager, Brian Pendleton, and I hopped on a boat and met them out there. They had already successfully got the boat 3/4 of a mile off the harbor entrance. In doing that, that not only ensured our harbor entrance remained open, but it also removed the possibility of potentially thousands of gallons of diesel entering into the harbor, which would have been a significant environmental issue. When the general manager and I got out there, we were able to support what was already happening and further coordinate with the Coast Guard. We decided to tow the boat farther offshore so that we had a greater buffer, and we worked with the Coast Guard and the salvage companies to develop a plan. If you recall, this particular date was the first date of our Parade of Lights, so it was equally stressful to have a lot of things going on, but we were able to facilitate all that very well. This incident technically occurred outside the boundaries of the Port District. In many cases, other agencies might have or would have more than likely deferred many aspects of the rescue to other agencies. And as a result, that typically delays things and allows for additional things to happen as stuff goes unattended. However, our Harbor Patrol acted decisively, taking full control of the scene, administering first aid, ensuring the victim's safe return to shore, securing the vessel, and implementing a proactive strategy to protect the harbor. Our staff also seamlessly coordinated with the larger agencies as the salvage operation progressed. This response was another testament of our efficiency and effectiveness made possible by the board and general manager's support, the continued support in our staffing, our recruiting and training of exceptional personnel. Our Harbor Patrol staff are selected for their unique skills and dedication, and then our extensive training ensures that they perform to the highest levels. This was an example of them doing exactly that. Additionally, and I would be remiss if I didn't acknowledge that we have a very good working relationship with the Ventura towboat, and he is our only backup and our support, and we continue to work cohesively with him. We train with him and his staff, and in all these instances, he was out there in a volunteer capacity to help us out. So thank you very much for the time, and hopefully that was helpful to paint a picture.
Thank you, John. That concludes our general manager's report this evening.
Thank you. First, are there any questions from the public, the audience here? Any questions from anyone online?
Commissioner? Just Commissioner Howell, I'd like to say that all those accommodations are very well deserved, and I personally am deeply appreciative of both the dedication and the skill of our Harbor Patrol.
Yeah, I just like that. I don't know how long it's been, but several years ago when we started, I think, investing more in the Harbor Patrol, and these are the things that we wanted to have happen. And it's kudos to you and John, you in particular, for building this team that can do this for the port and for the public in general. So kudos to all of you. Good work.
I want to echo that. At our last meeting, we had someone speak up at the retirement because he had saved that person's life. And we are now in a position to have other people come because of the actions that were taken to save lives. So I'm just incredibly impressed with the professionalism of the Harbor Patrol. And, you know, John, you often come and talk about the trainings that you go through, and I know that the trainings are muscle memory for these moments where you are in a position to have to act very instinctually. So just well done all the way around. And please, and just on a personal note, I think Officers Bear and Crane would be a great children's book for water safety. I kind of picture a little crane and a little bear. So just throwing that out there. There you go.
What, John, my comment is I just want to say thank you. I think I speak for a lot of people that we really appreciate the work that you report to us, but I'm sure there's a lot of other things that you do that go not unnoticed, but unrecognized. But I think that when anyone gets in trouble in our harbor, that you are there. And I just want to say that it doesn't go unnoticed for a lot of us. And we just want to say thank you to you and all of your staff. And particularly impressed with the preparation. When you showed me on the boat that time, everything that you do in terms of getting ready, safety, 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 it pays off. Thank you. Okay, we're now going to go to the consent agenda. There are three items on there. Approval of amendment number one to a professional services agreement with Noble Consultants for engineering and consulting services. The approval of rental repayment plan for retail, office, and marina lease agreements with Contrail Aquatics doing business as Ventura Dive and Sport. And then C, approval of amendment number one to the parcel 20 master lease.
I'll move to present the consent agenda.
Is there a second?
I'll second if there are no public comments. I wanted to ask about that.
I'm sorry. Are there any public comments to any of the three items on the consent agenda?
I just had a question, not public, Commissioner Howell, about the scope. Is this strictly for director? Item A?
Item C.
Item C. Yeah, hold on. I need to pull up that report. But item C is related to a request that we received from Coastal Commission with regards to clarification of the leasehold interests of director who are here this evening. So that was one of the items we were requested to provide, and that triggered the need for an amendment number one to the lease to provide that clarification for Coastal Commission. So,
okay, I was asking about item A in terms of expanding the professional services with Noble.
Okay, I'm sorry, I thought you were referring to C. Item A, yes, it was an additional expense related to requests for information from Coastal Commission regarding the proposed director marina project.
Okay, so that's strictly addressing director.
The additional cost.
Okay.
1,000, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
It will take public comment.
Hi, Leonora Valvo. Just wanted to thank Brian and the team. We have really been trying to get through the coastal process, and we keep thinking that we've got the last set of questions, and then the next set of questions comes. And this last set, hopefully, is the last set, but we really appreciate you guys working really fast to get that amendment done. You probably know, but the Coastal Commission felt it was unclear that Parcel 14 was part of Parcel 20, and they are definitely very detailed. So we appreciate your help with that, and it's all been resubmitted, so hopefully we'll – I did ask if we could get on the March agenda. I haven't heard back yet, but we'll see.
And I'm just going to restate my motion to approve the consent agenda. Not sure what I said before.
Yeah, I'll second that. And a quick question. If they do make the March meeting, do we know where that is?
Did you happen to look up, Leonora, where
the March meeting?
Because they move them around the state.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. I mean, if it was somewhere nearby. Well, if it's nearby, we may want to think about.
Yeah, for sure. The other thing that's a great suggestion. The other thing we'll do is we'll look at the staff report from Coastal, and see. Sometimes they'll even after all this work, it'll translate into a consent agenda item of theirs, potentially. And if that's the way it goes, and it's far away, we probably wouldn't. If it's close by, we'll get over there. But we're available to continue to answer any further questions Coastal Commission has.
With that, we'll get a roll call vote.
Commissioner Stevens?
Yes.
Commissioner Gardena?
Yes.
Vice Chair Howell?
Yes.
Secretary Rainey?
Yes.
Vote carries 4-0.
Thank you. We'll now go on to the standard agenda item. Standard agenda item one, presentation on California Cooperative Liquid Asset Securities System, other known as California CLASS, and authorize the general manager to invest funds with the CA CLASS.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Secretary. I'd like to ask Gloria to introduce our speaker. And Gloria, would you please take it away?
Staff has recently introduced California Cooperative Liquid Asset Security System, or California CLASS for short, as another avenue in which to invest district funds. Bob Scholl from California CLASS is here tonight to introduce you to California Class and its benefits.
There we go. Better. Thank you, Gloria. Good evening, commissioners. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for your time. I'm not sure how I follow John and his team. But anyway, I'll give it a shot. Probably take 10 minutes, I'm thinking, and then open it up to any questions you might have. But again, Bob Scholl with California Class and Public Trust Advisors. I'll explain the relationship between California Class and Public Trust in just a minute. But very simply, California Class, if you're not familiar with a local government investment pool, they've been around probably 40 to 50 years around the country. But basically, it's nothing more than a money market type fund or strategy, but one built exclusively for the public sector. So it is in the form of a JPA. We have a board of directors. We'll talk about that in a minute. But that's one thing I like to share to give you kind of a point of reference. Everything we do at California Class and Public Trust looks just like any money market fund that you might have used for your own personal purposes, Schwab, Fidelity, a bank, what have you. So next slide, please. So the statutory framework, which some of you might be familiar with in the state of California, and it's actually not that different than the framework in the entire country, is twofold. First of all, it's California Code. California Code 53601 essentially lays out the guardrails for the management of public funds. And if you remember the Orange County bankruptcy in 1994, that kind of changed the landscape a little bit. But the guardrails are very tight, they're very conservative, and essentially what California Code says is as a public entity, you can invest your funds in just a short list of asset classes or securities. U.S. government securities, U.S. government agency securities, AAA rated, not AAA rated, excuse me, investment grade, commercial paper, and bank products like money market funds and CDs, and that is it. The other part of the statutory framework is the district's investment policy, which I've looked at, and I think Brian has been updated fairly recently. But what we tell most entities in the state of California that we work with is that your investment policy, really, in most cases, it doesn't make sense to have that policy be more conservative than California Code. Because if you have a policy that mirrors the code, it gives you flexibility, you can adapt, you can make changes fairly easily. Next slide, please. So the relationship between California Class and Public Trust, real quickly, we were launched almost 3 years ago. What happened, or the events that occurred, were across the state, there was demand for another liquidity pool in the state of California. There were two previously. So the demand was so strong that the California Special Districts Association, the CSDA, and the League of California Cities came together and sponsored a third pool, which is California Class. And the way that process works is a board was assigned, the JPA is put together, and then RFPs went out for legal, accounting, other service providers, and then an RFP went out for an investment manager to manage the funds and administer the pool. And at California Class and at Public Trust, we were lucky enough to win that business. I should say Public Trust was lucky enough to win that business and become the investment manager of the pool. It's important to note that the pool has been up and running again about 3 years. I'll give you an update on our size in a second. But Public Trust as an entity is the largest manager of local government pools in the country. We currently manage about $105 billion in 17 pools across the country. And with those pools, we work with about 9,000 public agencies of all sizes, shapes, and varieties. The other thing I'll tell you about Public Trust that I think is important is public funds is our only line of business. We do not have another institutional group, no high net worth group, no other business activities except public funds. And because the guardrails are really all about short duration, high quality fixed income investments in the public sector, that's all we do. So there's no distractions with the equity markets, international, alternatives. We have an incredibly deep, and it's referenced on the slide, portfolio management and credit research team. We're about 120 people strong with 9 offices around the country. The headquarters are in Denver, and that's where the PM team and all credit research is done. So that's a little bit about Public Trust, and I'll make a few comments as we close. Next slide, please. Just real quickly, our board currently, 2 special districts, 2 cities represented. and a county as well. And what we like to say is, again, a JPA structure where the board of directors is a board of your peers. It's public sector officials and professionals with a tremendous amount of experience in the state and in the sector. Next slide, please. I mentioned real quickly the CSDA, the Special District Association, and the League of California Cities. We work closely with both entities. We're very active across the state with their events and conferences, et cetera. And they're very, very supportive of what we're doing. Next slide. So the three foundational tenets in the public sector world: safety is first and foremost. It's everything that we do at Public Trust. At the end of the day, every day, it's all about safety. And it's all about securing principle, maintaining principle, and having a very deep, very tactical, very consultative process around portfolio management and credit research. Liquidity is number two. With California Class, you actually have same-day liquidity. If we have trade instructions by 11 a.m., the money moves that same day, so it's highly liquid. And then third, we, you know, one of the first questions we get is, what is the yield? What is the yield? Well, the yield is very competitive, and basically in the public sector world, you should be concerned with having a competitive yield. But yield takes a back seat to safety and liquidity. Next slide. So this is what the pool looks like currently. The box in the middle is the prime style fund, which we're talking about today. The term prime style, if you see that, refers to a money market style vehicle that can hold commercial paper. If you're looking at money funds elsewhere, if you see a government money fund, that specifically is investing just in government securities. A prime style fund is allowable by California code, but does designate that you can use commercial paper within that fund. Down near the bottom, it is very, very liquid. The weighted average maturity per the documents can never exceed 60 days. So very high quality, very short duration, highly liquid. Enhanced cash is a strategy that goes out medium term, from maybe 3 months to a year and a half, perhaps. Gets some attention today, and it's something that might make sense to the district going forward as interest rates drop, as we see cuts with rates, which we've seen already this year or starting in September. A medium-term strategy might make some sense for some of our participants, some of our districts, but it's really a case-by-case situation. As interest rates drop, fixed income prices increase. That's the benefit of an enhanced cash approach. And again, be happy to share more detail at a later time on enhanced cash. But it is included in our marketing information, so I wanted to comment. Next slide. So LAIF is the fund that many of you may be familiar with. Stands for Local Agency Investment Fund, run by the state of California. It is the big beast in the state. It's been around forever. It's about $31 billion in size. LAIF has a place in the state of California. What we see in most cases is a lot of our participants will continue to use LAIF for some liquidity purpose, but also allocate to a pool like California Class. LAIF is not the easiest place to do business. If you're familiar with LAIF, it does have its place. It also runs a unique structure in terms of maturities, where it's always about a 300-day maturity schedule with the portfolio, which doesn't give it a whole lot of flexibility. With less than 60 days in a portfolio with maturities, it allows us to be very adaptable, very flexible, and really react to what's happening in the interest rate environment at the time. Next slide. So I won't spend a lot of time with this, but one of the reasons for Cal Cities and the Special Districts Association to come to us, big state, California, lots of liquidity. There was also a sort of desire to have a better customer service experience. Believe it or not, it's been somewhat lacking in the public sector investment world. Public trust around the country has been known for our technology. We've been known for state-of-the-art portals, where basically all of our participants do every transaction paperless right at their desk. Move money back and forth, print customized statements. There's libraries on there about the interest rate environment, the economy, you name it. We get more positive feedback on the portal and our customer service process believe it or not, than we do on returns. We're just very easy to do business with. We consult, we're present. We have a full-time client service desk with five people based in Denver that pick up the phone if there's a question or an issue that we can address. So that sort of value-added proposition has been very successful for us in the state in terms of the technology we make available. Next slide, please. So very easy to use, I mentioned. You can have unlimited sub-accounts within California Class, which is a feature that's unique to JPA pools. If you want to segregate and have a bucket of money for a particular purpose, you can have unlimited sub-accounts. You can do unlimited transactions with no charges whatsoever. And also, there are no early redemption penalties at any time. If we have a trade go into the portal, again, by 11 a.m., the money moves that same day, daily liquidity with no fees, no transaction fees, no early redemption fees. And you might know the public sector has been sort of attacked recently by those with bad intentions around security. We have dual authorization with everything we do, meaning there's dual authorization with every transaction by at least two people within a district to authorize transactions as an added level of security. Next slide, please. So real quick, and I'm sorry, one more and we're done. Just a little bit about Public Trust. I mentioned that we're based in Denver, currently have, I guess it's nine offices around the country. I'm up in the Bay Area. I head up the team in California for Public Trust and the pool. We have two other people on the ground in the state as well that help with relationship management and service. Again, the sole focus at Public Trust is public funds investment management. I think that's absolutely important to know. We do try to be very consultative. We try to engage with our participants. In the pool space, quite frankly, over the last decade or so, it's become a little bit commoditized. We try to, again, have a value-added approach to be consultative, to talk about investment policy. We can help with a cash flow analysis. Those are the things that we do in addition to just the pool itself. A safety first investment approach, again, absolutely critical to everything we do. When the firm was formed 14 years ago, it was four individuals with 100 plus years experience in the public sector world that thought they could do basically a better job on the service side and with technology, and that's what really started the firm 14 years ago. And currently, I mentioned the pools that we run around the state, around the country, excuse me. California Class, as of today, is at almost $2 billion in size, and we have 231 participants. I think we shared a participant list for the commissioners. Again, it's been very well received in the state, and again, I think there was a desire there to at least have another option for liquidity purposes in the state of California, and that's how the pool came together. So, oh, I wanted to mention too, both the Santa Cruz Port District and the Oxnard Harbor Port District, where I was earlier today, are both participants in the pool. So thank you very much for your time. Can I field any questions?
Well, first, does have any questions from the public? Either on premise or online? If not, commissioners?
Yeah, a couple of quick questions, sure, before we kind of bring it back. Some for Brian, too. But do you have any? I saw Tehama up there is about the only county I saw referenced. Are there any urban counties in California that are participating?
We had a couple of counties. I think we're up to four counties at one point. Okay. But if you know how the counties operate, the money comes in big chunks and leaves in big chunks for cash flow purposes. So right now, Tehama County, Sonoma County, and El Dorado County have accounts open with California Class.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Good. You know, I mean, one of the benefits to us of investing here would be kind of diversification, right? So how different are you from Leif, I guess? You know, I mean.
Yeah. You know, it comes up all the time. Okay. And, you know, one of the responses is it's always good to diversify, correct? But typically, if you're diversifying, you're diversifying across asset classes. So Leif has its place because one of the little issues with Leif is if you close a Leif account, which a lot of agencies in the state have Leif accounts, it's hard to get it back open. It's just the way things work. So probably half of our 230 participants still have LAIF accounts, and they keep a certain amount of their assets there. And we're just complementing the strategy with LAIF. But to go to more than one local government pool, there's two others available in the state, probably doesn't make a lot of sense unless it's purely a discussion that we want to spread our assets around to various providers. Because with California Code, if you looked at the portfolios, they're all, it's almost identical, in fact.
And would that mean, and I don't know whether you can answer this or not, that the yields are similar?
Very similar.
Okay.
They range between about 10 basis points amongst the two other pools. LAIF trails the three pools by a bit because of that weighted average maturity that's longer, which I can go into more detail if you'd like. But last night we posted a 441 in California class, and the two other pools are within 10 basis points, a small percentage around that number. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Sure.
And are there any other questions?
I think it's very timely that we just got the email about from the California Debt and Investment Advisory Commission with the updated local agency investment guidelines. And from my quick skim of it, it certainly looks like that class is consistent with it, but wouldn't mind some reassurance of that.
Yes, absolutely. Completely compliant with California Code. It's monitored on an active basis with portfolio management and credit research, because that dictates everything that we do.
Thank you.
I think my question is for either Gloria or Brian. I'm not sure who's in the best position to answer, but why now? Why you know, you're bringing this to us now? It's been around since 2022. Just curious.
I think for us, it's an opportunity now, after having some time to study it and evaluate it. And it was just formed in 22, so we've certainly seen it take off in terms of special districts and so on. And I think it's a great opportunity now for many of the reasons that were described tonight, for diversification, but I think also, you know, in terms of helpfulness in managing the funds. So the opportunity for the sub accounts to be able to have the liquidity within the same day, those are some greater benefits than I think what are there with LAIF today. I wouldn't be recommending elimination of our LAIF for purposes of our accounts. This would probably be a blended strategy of the two. The monies that we need more frequently are from the capital reserve fund than, for example, the dredging fund. So the direction I might go with this would be more to use the continue to use LAIF for our dredging funds and commercial fishing funds, and then maybe look more towards some of our capital reserve funds for this, given its liquidity and given the ability to create sub-accounts and track. So I think in terms of timing, we've had a little bit more time to watch this grow, evolve, be able to bring it back to you for consideration.
If I could quickly comment too, the dynamics have been very unusual over the last 2.5 years. You know, interest rates were next to nothing for 7 years. So in the public sector, interest income was, you know, not a topic of conversation. So when we launched the pool, the Fed funds rate was less than 1%. It was 0.95. It goes all the way to 5.5 over the course of 2.5 years, which had never happened with that kind of speed. And so interest income options, what's out there, Brian's situation here is not unusual at all. So
I did one other thing. You know, you talk about the yield. I mean, he's being modest in that they have outperformed as those interest rates were climbing the other assets. But again, we don't want to lead with that kind of a discussion. Obviously, it's the safety diversification. Yeah. Yeah. But they certainly have been competitive in some ways, you know, more competitive in those years with the run-up with the interest rates. But I'm looking at it more from a diversification and continued safety and ease of use for the accounting team.
One more, if I can. The fee structure, is it very similar to LAIF?
Actually, much less than LAIF. We charge a flat 10 basis points for all of our services, and that's flat. So If you're familiar with the structure of an ETF or mutual fund, the yield we quote is net of that fee. So it's after that fee's been deducted. But there are no other charges whatsoever than that 10 basis point management fee. And that's right now the lowest available, the other two pools as well.
Okay. Thank you.
And as the liaison, I've had the opportunity to speak with Bob about this and about the California class. And in prior lives, in a similar life now, I can tell you in terms of ease of use, when one needs capital and has to get it, you have to wait a certain time period to get it out of life, whereas this allows easier access. The other thing is, although, you know, we're going to continue, we would continue with life. One of the things is in terms of when you do treasurer reports and the like, it's a lot easier because of the technology that this is using to report back than it is with life, unless you catch it at the right time. So that's why if you look at any city or county or any other entity that's using LAFE, you will see that you usually report, even if it's a monthly treasurer's report, it's on a three-month basis, on a quarterly. And that's because if you don't catch it in time to download the information, you won't get it. Whereas here, I could get it almost that day.
Yeah, you can access the portfolio, see the holdings. You can get a true daily yield. Complete transparency with LAFE, you can only get a quarter end yield. And you really don't know what their fee structure is as well. So transparency is something we talk a lot about.
Well, if it started in 2022, I'm glad that you didn't jump into it right away. I'm ready to move that we authorize the general manager to invest a portion of the district's reserves in the California class.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Can I get roll call?
Before we do,
I'm sorry.
What does a portion mean?
Well, I think we wanted to intentionally leave that open. We didn't want to define a certain specific dollar amount in the recommendation. So I think I told you where
but
I'm
you
headed.
Have the thing in mind.
What I had in mind is what I described earlier, which is the maintaining the dredge reserve fund in life. And I'm not using the right name. What's the boat fund called?
Fisheries Reserve Fund.
Okay. And that's only a couple hundred thousand, yes. I think. The dredge reserve, recall, is a $3 million fund. So I would recommend continuing to keep that with life. That's the money we don't need as often, and moving the capital reserve fund to class. That is how much ish.
Ish is fine.
The operating and improvement reserve fund is about 14 million right now.
All right, thank you.
With that in mind, can I have a little. Yes.
In a second.
Commissioner Stevens?
Yes.
Commissioner Gardena?
Yes.
Vice Chair Howell?
Yes.
And Secretary Rainey?
Yes.
Vote carries 4-0.
Okay.
Thank you once again for your time.
Thank you. All right. We'll move on to the standard agenda item 2. Update of the emergency to address the failure of the elevator at 1591 Spinnaker Drive. Brian?
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. Recall that the action that the board took with respect to the elevator requires a continuing return to the board for authorization of the emergency to continue. And you've seen this with other issues in the past, so you'll continue to see this on the agenda. every meeting. I would ask that Justin Fleming, our capital projects manager, has a report to give you tonight regarding the status of the project since you last took action.
Good evening, commissioners. Justin Fleming, new projects manager, or capital projects manager here at the Ventura Port District, and I'll be glad to be giving an update on the elevator 1591. So, after receiving the board's approval to change the capital improvement budget and declare an emergency, the general manager instructed staff to work with the vendors we had approached with quotes and provide a recommendation. In addition, staff has been in communication with the tenants affected by this outage, and now that we have made definitive moves forward, staff will again stay in close communication with the affected tenants to provide them an update as to our progress involving said elevator. Of the three elevator contractors we have reached out to, two responded with competitive quotes. Of the two, staff recommended contracting with TK Elevator, or TKE, for the following reasons. One, TKE's proposed time frame was shorter. The completion date is set for no later than May 23rd, 2025. TKE's overall cost was lower. TKE's subcontractor performed the fire alarm upgrade. TKE has confirmed that they will take responsibility for all permits related to the work. And TKE's agreed to pay $100 a day liquidated damages penalty for any time after the May 23rd deadline. Once TKE was selected, staff and legal counsel worked with the TKE to resolve terms and conditions to the satisfaction of both parties. And the contract has now been executed for $156,253.77.
I would add that we will be in communication with our tenants who are affected by the elevator outage continually, and this week in particular, let them know that the contract has been let. Work will begin, but they won't see anything because a lot of this work will be off-site. Continue to keep them up to date. I think we're also working on some enhanced signage in and around the elevator so that our public and patrons of those businesses know how to access the businesses on the, up on the second floor. And that concludes our report. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions or comments from the audience here on premise? What about online?
I'll move the recommended action.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Can I get a roll call vote?
Commissioner Stevens?
Yes.
Commissioner Gardina?
Yes.
Vice Chair Howell?
Yes.
Secretary Rainey?
Yes.
Vote carries 4-0.
Okay. So that concludes our regular agenda item. Is there anything for the discuss for the order? If not, we stand adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, and I'll see you at the next meeting.
Safe travels, Elizabeth.
Thank you. Bye-bye.